Hi, I'm Amit Sharma at the Arlen Food Studios of the Food Decisions Research Laboratory at Penn State's School of Hospitality Management. Welcome to this pod from our studio facility in the Merit Foundation building of the School of Hospitality Management. The hotel and lodging industry is a crucial part of the global hospitality industries, and it contributes significantly to the economy by providing employment and entrepreneurial opportunities. According to STR, a leading consulting company in the part of the industry, in 2022, the U.S. hotel and lodging industry's revenue were approximately $240 billion. In the United States alone, the accommodation sector employs approximately 2.3 million people. That's also based on the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Major hotel chains like Marriott International maintain a global presence with over 7,600 properties across 133 countries. That's a huge company, which means millions of people employed. There are new things that shape the nature and experiences of this industry. For instance, technological advancements, and particularly advancements such as online booking platforms, mobile apps that are revolutionizing guest experiences and even the way these hotels work. All of this is to say that the hotel and lodging industry is a vibrant part of our economy and also of the global economy. The industry also embraces diversity, offering accommodations ranging from boutique hotels catering to niche markets to international chains providing standardized services. The sector's adaptability ensures a personalized experience for a broad spectrum of consumers, making it, as I said, a very important part of not just our economies, but also of our shared and travel experiences. So what we wanted to do in this part is to talk a little bit more about the hotel and lodging industry from a variety of perspectives and not just the economic perspective. And I have a very special guest in this part to take us through this journey so that you can see not just the front end of what this industry does for us as travelers, but also get around the corners and to the back of what it means to be part of this industry. I am delighted to welcome Ms. Anna Blue, the president of the American Hotel and Lodging Association Foundation, or the AHLA Foundation. We'll talk about the difference between AHLA and the foundation, the AHLA Foundation, in a bit. Ms. Blue brings more than two decades of social impact leadership to her role as the president of the AHLA Foundation, which drives meaningful change in support of a stronger and more equitable hotel industry workforce. A seasoned executor, Anna's career has centered on advancing deep-rooted systemic change in gender equity, urban education, and human safety. In her executive leadership roles, Anna has built transformational impact and cause marketing partnerships with global brands and mobilized communities to drive action. Anna has been featured as a speaker on some of the largest global stages, sharing her expertise on leadership, social justice, and equitable advancement in the workplace. I have had the opportunity to interact with Ms. Blue a couple of times as she visited our campus, and it's just a delight to talk to her. She brings such fascinating and interesting experiences and perspectives to these discussions. So thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
And it is so cool to actually be sitting in front of a guest, because we do this so many times. We do this online and via Zoom. Yeah. So this is a special moment. So thank you.
Thank you.
And welcome to the Arlen Foods podcast.
Thank you. I love this podcast. I've listened to a few.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
we talked about how we might discuss issues on the podcast. So just as a starting point, and as I mentioned in the preamble, could you share the difference between what the AHLA is and does versus the foundation?
Yes. So the American Hotel and Lodging Association is a standard trade association that really focuses on the advocacy of the business. So the HLA, I always say, is focused on the business, on the bottom line, on making sure that there are not harmful policies, legislation for our industry, and that the industry can continue to thrive from a business perspective. The foundation was set up as a separate 501c3, so we're a nonprofit. So we are two legally, we are two separate entities. And we focus on the people, on the workforce. As you mentioned, the equitable advancement, the recruitment, retention, making sure that people come into the industry and can build lifelong careers.
Okay. Now, I was looking at your background and I didn't see hospitality. So what got you interested to be part of this foundation?
Yeah, so my background is in social impact. I've run nonprofits and global movements for change across many, many issues. And what I've learned in 20 years is you have to be where there is power and influence and money to actually make change. So this opportunity came up, and the idea of aligning an entire industry, very powerful people, the people on my board, HLA's board, the executive committee, I call them the big dogs of hospitality. They are, they're the ones who are the leaders and the decision makers for this industry. And so being able to have that access, and then also access to those resources, to be able to pool the resources of, the financial resources of this industry to then reinvest back into the hotel workforce, to reinvest into DEI, the things that matter to people, to the people showing up and doing their jobs. That felt like the right place to be. Like I could actually do something to make a difference.
You mentioned power. Is that power sort of related to some of the things that I mentioned in the preamble in terms of employment, the sort of the economic impact the industry has, or any other aspect of what you think is the influence of this industry?
I just mean the power of the people in decision-making seats.
Got it. Okay.
To be able to create change, to be able to actually say what we're doing right now, maybe we could do something different. Maybe this would be beneficial to people. More people would stay, more people would come. So to be able to access decision makers is important when you want to advance social change of any kind.
So why now, in the sense for, let's say, the hotel and lodging industry, are there things that you think that the industry has experienced as changes over time, or changes that are coming, that this is the moment to probably make it, sorry to use that word again, but make change or advancements?
I think there's always opportunity to make change.
Right.
The foundation is actually 70 years old, but for about 65 of those years operated purely as a scholarship fund. So the industry identified an opportunity to bring resources together to help make sure that young people, like here at Penn State, can pursue a degree in hospitality and get them excited about coming into our industry. And then my predecessor saw an opportunity to do more, to create a bigger impact. And then there are things that happen in the world that now I think we live in a day and age where all industries and all companies are sort of forced, whether by willing or, by choice or by force, to respond to the world, to respond to issues of sustainability, to respond to issues around diversity, equity, and inclusion. These are things that people are galvanizing movements around. So the industry, I think, more and more so is like everybody, it sort of has to get on board and figure out what their stance is, who they want to be, what they want their reputation to be, where they want to put their resources. And so I think that pressure exists. And we're seeing the industry, I think, step up in a really great way, but that's not going away anytime soon. This kind of combination of business and social impact is here to stay.
Yeah. You talked about impact, and if I remember, HLA also has sort of international global reach. Is that true, and how does the foundation work along with that, or are you limited to the United States or Northern America?
It's interesting. I think it's growing for AHLA. So even though the first A stands for the American Hotel and Lodging Association, and that's very much been the history, and a lot of the hotel industry is rooted in the United States. The companies are headquartered here. But yeah, I mean, this is a global industry. It's a global business. If you're working with Marriott International, you can't forget that they are international, right? And you can't just think about the United States. Our advocacy as an association focuses solely on the US.
Sure,
it is
right.
US advocacy.
Right.
So the bulk of what AHLA does is still US. However, with the acquisition of HTNG, there was an opportunity to do more globally. And we certainly have a number of global partners that we work with, you know, HSMAI, we work with HTNG, obviously, is now in-house. So I think that has given HLA an opportunity to have more of a global presence. But given that the vast majority of our work is centered around advocacy as an association, it's still very much US-centric. I imagine that will continue to change over the next decade, and we'll see, you know, where we can continue to advance policies potentially in other places. For the foundation, right now, most of our work is still centered in the US, although as somebody who has taken a nonprofit from US specific to global before, I think there are opportunities, especially around our work around gender equity. You know, women are half the world, the global population, and yet we are not equal anywhere. So while those inequities are different in different countries and different parts of the world, they still exist, and they exist in the workplace everywhere. Right. So I think there's an opportunity with Forward, which is our Women's Alliance, to really expand. I think with our academic partnerships, there's also an opportunity for us to expand. So little by little, I have that global mindset. So I think we'll get there.
Nice. I think that's what I was probably should have referred to as the educational activities have the little bit of the global reach.
Absolutely.
And then to our listeners, HSMAI is, I'm not going to get to the to expand the acronyms, but it's the marketing.
The commercial role,
right.
Revenue management, sales, and marketing.
Still related to the hotel and lodging industry.
Yes.
Okay. All right. You already said a lot that we need to unpack, but before we get into sustainability and the diversity and the cool stuff, I want to bring in another cooler stuff, maybe, and that's the technology.
Yeah.
You know, just, I mentioned that a little bit.
Oh yeah.
Technology is constantly changing.
Yes.
I want to throw in AI and robotics as well. How do you see that as changing the industry in a way that your role becomes crucial from the foundation's point of view?
That's a great question. So technology and AI is a constant conversation within the hospitality and the hotel industry, because we are still a people first business. So I think answering the first piece of technology is, how do we use technology to make hospitality actually more personal, right? So if you think about walking into a hotel room, I remember the first time I walked into a hotel room and I saw Welcome Anna on the television screen, right? That's actually a person. I remember like actually thinking, oh, wow. You know, there's those things that technology has done, and that's such a small thing, but it allows that experience to feel more personal. And I think there are ways that can continue. You have the option now to use a mobile key to bypass the front desk if it's late or you're tired or, you know, whatever the situation is, or I don't like the mobile key. So I like the human interaction. So I think technology gives people more of a choice. Not everybody wants that human interaction, but there is still somebody there at the front desk. When we get to the ability for robotics to turn over a room and, you know, and be part of delivering food or housekeeping or some of those things, I think it'll be a really interesting time of what happens with the industry. But right now we're not there yet. And so we still need people. From a foundation standpoint, and this is, I'm going to try not to get on my soapbox too much, you know, and in all of the conversations I have about AI, I think there's a lot to be excited about. There's a lot to be terrified of, just like everything, you know. Social media was the same thing when it came around. There's a lot in hindsight we could have done differently to keep people safer online, to put better things in place. And I think we're in that position with AI. As we focus, and I've focused very much in my background on diversity, equity, and inclusion, that's where I don't yet know the role of the foundation on the AI, but as if that is going to come into our industry, if AI is going to be a part of what we do in hospitality, then the inherent bias that exists in AI, we need to get rid of, right? People think because it's computer generated that it is more intelligent, but it's actually sourcing human information. It's sourcing information from people, which means that the bias of people, all of those systemic issues around race and gender and age and class and all of these things exist in AI, but it is a more trusted source because it's come from a computer. And so I want to make sure that we as an industry, I mean, we as humankind, but we as an industry can think about that as we bring AI into our industry. If we truly want to be people first, then we need to make sure that we are bringing the best parts, the most equitable parts of AI into our industry. But how we do that, I don't yet know.
Right. That's a really good point. And that sort of speaks to the customer experience where the technology, as you rightly said, can be leveraged in very positive ways.
Absolutely.
On the employee side, such as robotics, and it's not, you're right, it's not there yet where employees will be replaced. But is the industry beginning to sort of talk about that? Because there's data that shows that while hotels still want people to be employed,
Yeah.
there's a
Labor
gap,
shortage. There's a
there's
labor
a
shortage.
shortage,
Yeah.
and we don't see the labor shortage coming anywhere close to what it was pre-COVID, even in the next 10 years.
Yeah.
So what how's the industry talking about this?
So I think that's where we're going to have to see technology. The industry is very much talking about what jobs can we start to think about either using technology or robotics as an add-on. So we still want people. We still need people, even if it's people managing robots, which sounds so strange to me, but we still need the human element of it. We're not there yet where humans are obsolete, and especially not in our business. But I do think that with you take housekeeping, there's a huge labor shortage. That's one of the roles that's being impacted. So they're outsourcing housekeeping to other companies. And now there's legislation that wants you to stop outsourcing. And the labor is involved and all of these things that I try not to get involved in. And so we have no choice because of the labor shortage. I still think this is an industry that would prefer humans. But if we don't have them and they're not coming into our industry, then we have to think creatively, and technology is the creative solution to that.
Yeah. Okay. A lot to come.
Oh yes. Yeah, it'll be interesting. For every industry, I think the next 10 years will be groundbreaking.
Right. Okay, so let's change a little bit and get to sustainability because there's something else that you talked about or you mentioned. So when we say sustainability in hotels, I mean, for the guests, the things that come to mind are, well, leave your towel, don't get them laundered. So there's sort of the front end of things. Where do you see the foundation's role when it comes to sustainability from the human angle in the sense employees? Or does it even spill into, I'm sure it does spill into somehow in the customer experience part.
Absolutely. Sustainability in our industry is so interesting because there's so many different layers of human responsibility. So there is an element that is the onus is on the guests to hang their towels up or to say that they don't need housekeeping that day, or not to use all of the little tiny bottles of things, and to make sure, in hotels now you have recycling and you have waste bins and they're different, but to make sure that people are utilizing those, because it's not a housekeeper's responsibility to come in and sort through your trash and identify what's recycling. So then you get to that next layer, which is what is the hotel's responsibility? And I think that every hotel is different. You have a different priority on sustainability. You have some, no matter what the brand policies are, brands don't own most of the hotels, as we know. And so then you're getting into owner groups, but that they might not be the ones managing the hotels. So you have the owners, you have the brands, you have the managers, you have the employees, and then you have the people. And that's a lot of layers to prioritize sustainability. And I'll be honest, I don't think it's happening. I think that they have their policies and people are either abiding by them or they aren't. And until we as an industry make a collective decision to make it a priority, I don't know that that will change. So I think there's a lot more at all of those levels that can be done. But you can't just say, oh, well, the guest didn't recycle, our hands are up, what the responsibility is off of us. There has to be a priority at every level. And it's great to see sustainable hotels now come in. You've got One Hotels, who I love to promote because everything, even their room key, it's like a little wood chip. And, and so every element of that hotel that can be is sustainable. And so it's possible. Like we know that it's possible, but it impacts the bottom line. It impacts, all of these other things that people in positions that are not mine get to decide. And so for AHLA and the foundation, so our sustainability work actually sits on the association side because there are so many laws and policies and regulations and things around it. There's a labor movement around it. There's just a lot of things that AHLA sort of takes care of. We are moving in a direction. I don't think it's been formally announced yet, so I don't think I can say anything, but there is a huge partnership with the Hotel Association of Canada that is very much around sustainability and driving sustainability in our industry. So that will be a very exciting moment, I think, for AHLA and the foundation. Obviously, we're one enterprise to really make hopefully help make it an accessible priority for the industry.
So let me just sticking with this for a second. I had a thought as you were talking that sustainability is based on these three pillars. Fourth, if you add governance, but you've got the profit, the economic, the human, and then the environmental. Is it if you were to sort of not a scorecard, but if you were to say, where the primary focus out of those three is, or let's put it this way, do you think there is a complete alignment between the emphasis that the industry places on the economic, the environmental, and the people side,
No.
on the social? Okay, all
No.
right. And is that something that the foundation would be working on in the sense of, okay, got it.
Yeah,
You're
I
shaking
think,
your head, so
yeah. So the foundation and AHLA combined, especially with this new initiative, I think there is a huge opportunity for us to create more alignment within the industry.
got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the time when we ask our audience
Oh, good.
a quiz question. So you get a break for a few seconds.
Fantastic.
And we'll jump right back into our discussion. So the quiz question for today's part is twofold. One, can you think of, do you know which is the smallest hotel in the world? And to counter it, which is the largest hotel in the world? I think we talked about the oldest hotel in a previous part. So I thought I'm going to bring in the size or the scale factor. Okay, well, we'll share it at the end of our discussion.
I'm very curious. I have some ideas, but yeah, there's so many different types of hotels. I'm very curious about the smallest. I don't know what the smallest would be that would still qualify as a hotel. And then, but even the largest, you think New York has the height, but then you have these sprawling resorts. So I'm very curious to know
Okay,
the
cool. You're a couple of thousand miles away, but
answer. Okay.
you're at least in the same region of
Okay. All right.
the world.
Okay.
All right. So diversity, equity,
Yes.
inclusion, belonging. You came in from a very broad perspective of DEI and a lot of work that you had done. What was your first impression of the hospitality industry? Or can you share that on here?
Is being edited, right? No, the industry has a long way to go, is what
Okay.
I will say.
All right. Fair
Yeah.
enough.
There is a lot of diversity at property level. Who you interact with, who you see in housekeeping, who you see in food and beverage, who you see it in the front of the house in a hotel operations. And the higher you go, the more scarce and sparse that diversity is.
I just sort of to qualify what you said, and I'm just going to throw this in, and please disagree if with me on this. Is it possible that the way things have been done in certain industries, including the hospitality industries, have not changed a lot over the years, over the centuries, we could say,
Correct.
and from me, for my mind, it's the economic model, right? So access to money, access to finance is a very big part of how change happens,
Yes.
right? Then you get access to new technology, new ways of doing things. So could that have been a factor? Because there is still a lot of consolidation, as you said, of power and money, that a few companies have it, and not the whole industry. I don't know. I'm blabbering. Does that make any sense?
Does. I mean, I think that there, we still, and this is not just in our industry, we still very much live in a world where people identify talent in succession planning and on boards and all of those things as people who think, look, act, speak, you know, like them. And so that's how we get stuck in these perpetual systems. I don't even know that it's this, you know, that there's ever a discussion of we don't want a woman or we don't want a person of color. It's
Right.
just not who you think of. It's not who you identify. You identify that the circle, and the circle is still small, and the circle does have the power, and the circle does have the money and access to finances. And so it's a mindset shift of thinking outside of the circle. But the benefits to that, I mean, they're proven. There's so much data around the benefits of people of diverse backgrounds and cultures and lived experiences being in positions of power. It just doesn't, it's the circle.
Right. So, in your space, the foundation space, what are the priorities when it comes to DE&I for the industry?
It's a number of things. I mean, for us, we focus a lot of our time on, as I mentioned, getting people not only to come into this industry, but to actually stay and build these lifelong careers. One of the things that I have really fallen in love with in my 13 months in this job is just the stories that I hear of the person who was a lifeguard at Marriott and now is head of development for a major company, the person that started out as a line cook that, you know, and you hear all of these, the bellhop who's now a GM, and those stories at first I'm like, oh, that you're the anomaly, right? You're those, you're the one story we float out there. No, it's all over the place. People who have built 20, 30, 40-year careers in this industry. And so that's what we want. We want that to continue. That's an amazing legacy as an industry to have.
So
And
retention.
yeah, that retention
Okay.
piece. But to keep people, I think, in this day and age where there is so much easy access to other opportunities, right? You can go and find another job fairly easily at a lot of levels. There's a lot of new companies. There's a ton of different industries. There's skills that are transferable. And so, as we think about how we're identifying talent for professional development, for a new opportunity, for a promotion, for a raise, there's a lot of bias in how people identify talent that they want to invest in, right? And so, when you think about, you know, is somebody a good fit for this role? Who determines fit? What does fit mean? Fit is typically based on bias, and that bias is often, who do I vibe with? Who do I get along with? Oh, well, this person has a great personality because they come up to me and we share the same sports team, or, you know, they like the same hobby that I do. Like, fit has very little oftentimes to do with their actual ability to do their job and what their potential is. And so that's a place that, and that's true across every level of the industry, from, you know, entry level all the way through management, general managers, corporate level, all the way up. You know, fit goes back to that looks like me, talks like me, acts like me, thinks like me, and also goes back to who do I just get along with? And that suddenly makes them a good fit. And so we've done a lot of work around that, working with hiring managers on how they're identifying talent for opportunities, because again, that carries all the way up. We also prioritized over the past few years, diversity, equity, and inclusion, like deep training for C-suite, because those types of, again, it has to be a cultural shift at your organization. It has to be a mindset shift at the top. And you can have all your managers take DEI training and they check the box, but does that change the culture of your company? Does that change the direction? Does it change your succession planning? No. So if we can get people in power with the money and the resources and the capabilities of setting tone and culture at their company to start to think differently, there's an opportunity there. And so those are just some of the many things that we're doing on this issue to try to prioritize
Yeah, and that sort of goes back to what your experience has been, that systemic change, that
systemic change. Yeah.
once you get get past the initial hurdle, then you're still at the tip of the iceberg. Then you got to make the rest of
Correct.
it
Yeah.
happen.
Yeah. Box checking is not change.
No.
It's, yeah,
Yeah.
right. And so, All of those things that go into, oh, numbers, like, oh, we're on, our numbers have increased by this, but what does that mean if nothing has changed?
Yeah.
And what is the experience like for those quote unquote numbers who are now in your company, and are they staying? Is this where they're going to grow their career? Would they recommend this to a diverse colleague of theirs to come into this industry? So yeah, you can't, it's not just numbers and box checking. You actually have to, there has to be a shift, like a true systemic shift that happens.
Yeah. And, you know, bringing in diverse opinions can also have an impact on how you look at the, you know, progress,
yeah.
how you look at technology, how you look at incorporating
yeah.
those things, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so hopefully bringing on that change is almost a reinforcing cycle over a period of time.
Yeah.
Okay. What concerns you when it comes to DEI for the industry?
I mean, what concerns me for the industry is what concerns me currently for the world, which is this backlash we're going through right now, where DEI have become taboo initials to say, and we can't talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, and people are anti. And, you know, anytime there is any time in history, we see it all the time. There is a movement forward of any kind. There is the backlash, right? It is this boomerang effect, and we're living through that right now. The movement forward was the unfortunate murder of George Floyd that catapulted this companies to stand up and to make statements and make commitments and, you know, start to push towards those, which then made everybody that wanted to kind of push back. And so it's this complicated time where I am actually finding, for the most part, this industry is still very much committed to what they set out to do, and they're doing good things, and they're moving sometimes slowly, but movement is still movement and progress is still progress.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have to talk about it differently. Like, it, I want to see everybody still wear it proudly. This is what we're doing. But when your consumers are pushing back and some of your employees are pushing back, it makes it hard. It makes it difficult to, you know, wear the big, you know, Superman logo on your chest and say that this is still important. And so I think we're seeing that that struggle within companies of, we still want to do this work. Do we call it something else? Do we just not say diversity, equity, inclusion? Do we talk more about access and opportunity? We're having that same conversation. We want people to come to the foundation as a resource for their companies, but there's such a mental backlash of just this, like, of, you know, ESG, sustainability, like, you're not allowed to say these words sometimes. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to say diversity, equity, and inclusion. So how do we do the work, which is still meaningful work, without ruffling too many feathers? And that's a concern, because what I want to see, just as a human and as an activist, is the more backlash there is, the more any company in any industry takes a firm stance. And it's disheartening to watch people sort of waffle when and not want to be public about the great work that they're actually doing, because being public means you might have less people staying in your hotel or buying your product. And so just as a person, that concerns me. But it's certainly happening in our industry too.
What's your personal opinion about sort of rebranding versus, you know, staying, you know, holding fast to what we thought that was progress?
I mean, as a longtime marketing communications professional, I'm always for a good rebrand, I think, if it's necessary.
Right.
To me, it's,
reframing it.
Yeah, reframing, you know, reframing sometimes helps educate people. It's a new way
a
of
point.
Talking about things.
Right.
I think that it's sad that it's necessary, right? But if that's what it takes to stay the course and to do the work and to make people feel comfortable continuing the work that they're doing, great. Let's find a new way to talk about it. Let's find a new way to educate people that feels disarming and that, you know, allows people to open their ears and their hearts and their minds to what the work that we're trying to do. If DEI offends you, then how do I get past that? I don't want to walk away. I want to get you there. So how do I get past that? That's the decision.
Yeah, that's a good point. So it's not related to sustainability as well, but I think with DEI also, does it concern you in terms of whitewashing from an industry's point of view, that, you know, not staying to your word? And often, because that's always a concern for a consumer. As a consumer, I always question that, fine. And you know, a lot of people got those messages from labor unions in hotels and from employees as well, that don't hang your towel, don't not avoid housekeeping, because that means I'm not on this shift and I'm not earning money, and the hotel is not sharing those savings or having that environmental impact. So is that something that concerns you?
It is hard. I mean, because the more we do on a sustainability front to alleviate the earth and the tremendous pressure we're putting on this planet, there are people's real jobs and ability to feed their families that are on the line as well. And I think that will continue to be a challenging balance. And we certainly see it in our industry, and I think other industries that use a lot of products and people and a labor force. But as packaging changes, and you know, there's just so many things that are changing, I think that is always going to be the, it's not just AI that's going to put people out of work. I mean, sadly, part of sustainability is we need less things impacting this planet. And where do you prioritize? How do you find that balance? But it's true. I mean, I don't have a solution for that, but it is very much true. It's a decision point. And there are labor unions pushing back against some of the sustainability efforts because they do represent people who need to feed their families. And I understand that.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge for the industry and for the people making decisions, because there's a lot of impacts on all sides. There's environmental impact, which matters, which is very important.
Right.
And there's human impact. And it's cyclical, like those overlap, because the environmental impact ultimately has massive consequences for human beings. So it's a challenge.
Yeah. And then that realignment of those pillars, right. Three or four.
Exactly.
Right. We're getting to the end of this, our discussion. So I wanted to ask you at least one last question. As you know, a lot of our listeners are consumers. As a professional and, you know, very deeply involved with the industry, what might be some sort of, for a consumer to look at this industry, what are some of the ways that a consumer can go past that initial experience, and maybe look at the industry for what it represents in terms of the people, obviously, but also this vast not infrastructure, but a whole complex of things that gets us to have that experience. Any advice that you can give our customers? Because I think putting it, I mean, I'm going to try and re-articulate it. I think consumer decisions are important because that's what drives the rest of the machinery.
Yeah.
And if we are not seeking that information, for instance, or we're not seeking that experience that could expand our perspective, what might be some advice that you could give our listeners?
There is such an incredible opportunity. The more you get to know this industry, just even as an outsider, I now think back to all of the times. I mean, I've traveled for work for as long as I can remember, and all of the hotels that I've stayed in, and I wish I knew then what I know now. The opportunity to engage with people who are part of, yes, this infrastructure, and you go in, you expect a certain experience and you want that to happen. And you know, but the way that people in hotels are dismissed as just like, you're there to serve me, as opposed to this being a more communal experience and the opportunity to stop and have a conversation with somebody at the front desk or a housekeeper or anybody that you might interact with. I mean, now I always reach out to the general manager to just say, you know, I'm really excited to come and be part of your experience. I mean, every hotel is an experience. And when you, it's hard because people don't understand. They don't understand that Marriott doesn't really own hotels, right? Mm-hmm. They think every Marriott they stay in is part of, you know, Marriott, and there's the management companies and the owners and the brands, and you know, and all of that is still new to me. And so there's this massive ecosystem at play to make that experience a positive experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that are there on the front line are sort of the tail end of that, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's all these right. other things, and Absolutely. They're the tail end of that, but that's what we see, and they're people, and they're people who who get up every day and they spend their days making this experience positive for other people. And I think going into a hotel, I wish every single consumer went into a hotel with that mindset of the opportunity to engage with these incredible people that all have stories to tell and are they're there because they have made a commitment. Yes, they get a paycheck, but they have made a commitment to making this a positive experience for you. And I wish I had thought about hotels in that way before.
What gets you excited about the industry?
There's so much opportunity. Yeah. There really truly is so much opportunity for this industry to do good, for this industry to be a leader in spaces, to be a leader in sustainability, to actually be a leader in DEI. There's just so much opportunity for this industry to step up, and I think we're seeing it. I think that I keep being told this is a slow moving industry. They're reluctant to change, but I've met some really incredible leaders that I am excited to see what they can do for this industry. And I think their hand is going to be forced in a number of ways, you know, as are many leaders. But I think there's just so much opportunity for us to be out ahead. And I hope that I'm right and that the industry will step up.
Wish you all the best.
Thank you very much.
For everything and the great things that you're doing at the foundation. And thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
This was so fascinating. I really enjoyed it. Okay, so you ready?
Yes, I need to know.
All right, now the answer to our first question. The smallest hotel in the world is the Ahoyse, located in Hamburg, Germany.
Okay.
Ahoyse, which basically means the little wedding house, was built in 1728 and has a width of 6.6 feet with a total space of 570 square feet or 53 square meters. And it does hold the Guinness World Record title for the smallest hotel in the world.
Oh, wow. Okay.
As for the largest hotel, it is the First World Hotel in Malaysia with 7,351 rooms.
Wow.
Now, there's a catch here. The First World Malaysia holds the distinction for being the largest hotel, but that's based on room count.
Okay.
It has two towers.
Okay.
However, the largest single building is the MGM Grand in Las Vegas.
In Las Vegas, yeah.
6,000.
I was wondering about Las Vegas, yes.
Yeah, so 6,852 rooms.
Wow. That's great. I now know something. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you again. Thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please share it with two or more people who you think will benefit from listening to it. And as always, make safe and informed choices and food choices. Above all, please stay healthy and cheerful. Until next time from the All In Food Studios, this is Amit Sharma. Thank you for listening.